Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. 1 month after May 16th's EF3 tornado, there are places in St. Louis where signs of disaster response are becoming more visible. Massive trees felled by winds are being removed. Blue tarps are covering holes where roofs used to be. Bricks and debris are stacked up in front of homes, right next to tents where their owners have lived for weeks. While some storm damage has seen repairs, it's clear that much more needs attention. And for residents of those places that have been most severely impacted by the tornado, trauma remains fresh. For 32 days since the tornado hit, people have been finding their way to the Fountain Park neighborhood in North St. Louis. And it's there that a mobile clinic, run by an organization that is usually focused on treating a very different kind of trauma, stands. To talk about that effort and how people are experiencing the after effects of St. Louis's tornadoes, I am joined now by Dr. L.J. Punch. Dr. Punch, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much.
Now, Dr. Punch, you are the founder of the Bullet-Related Injury Clinic, or BRIC. And in that role, and as a surgeon, you spend a great deal of your time with people who have been shot. How did going to Fountain Park, you know, and spending time with people affected by this tornado, how did that happen?
So the path of the EF3 tornado that tore a gash through the heart of St. Louis, when I saw it on the map, when I saw the destruction in the streets and the homes, looked to me like the wound that a bullet makes. Because it's not just where it begins and it ends. Mm. It's the path of explosive destruction along the way. And it's airborne, just like the winds and the power of the tornado. And when people are threatened through something that's airborne, it creates a very deep kind of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Had you ever experienced anything like that before? I know that you've lived in other states. Anything that approaches the degree of what you saw?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Never have I seen, nor have I seen a community affected by a disaster like this. I've had to look at history books to get any kind of comparison to understand what I've seen. And the only kind of level of destruction that I can imagine in a place like North St. Louis mm-hmm. is the destruction that happened with Hurricane Katrina as well as Maria that
right.
went through Puerto Rico.
And then we're looking at an anniversary coming up for Katrina very shortly.
Yes.
Who is it that is coming to the clinic that you've set up for help?
So Fountain Park is a beautiful park that, again, is along Zone A, sort of between Zone A and B of where the tornado hit. And it's across the street from Centennial Church, which is a church that has been serving the community for over a century by directly assisting both its congregants as well as people who are housing unstable, people in need of support, elders, and other ways. And so I was drawn, my group was drawn to go to Fountain Park the day after the tornado. And when we got there, we saw a group, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, already set up doing mutual aid. Mm-hmm. And we knew it would be a good place to begin outreach efforts.
Mm-hmm.
As we went, we saw four common needs: the need for rest, because people were sleeping in tents and cars, the need for hydration because it was hot and people didn't have water or ice, the need for care because people were so deeply traumatized, not being able to eat or sleep, being in pain and being very stressed out. And then finally, the need for some sort of capacity to recharge, and that included a solar power station.
Mm-hmm.
Those four simple offerings we continue to bring day after day in solidarity with the mutual aid already happening in the park. And what we saw was this resounding reception of this trauma care for people who were impacted by the tornado in many different ways in Fountain Park and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that people were coming because they had heard from others what you were doing?
Definitely word of mouth began to travel, but on those first few days, we literally walked the neighborhood, taking wagons with meals provided by World Central Kitchen and other kinds of aid like water and ice into the neighborhoods. And then the PSL team was also sending out mutual aid workers to do tree removal, help people clean up streets and debris from their yards.
Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of services, the kinds of care, let's put it that way, what are the kinds of care that your mobile clinic is offering to those who are coming to you?
Sure. So the thing is that a lot of times when moments of trauma happen, we can clearly recognize the trauma as the energy coming into the body. Mm-hmm. A car hits you, a bullet hits you, a storm hits you. But we fail to see and recognize clearly the way we respond to that trauma, which can be more of the source of suffering mm-hmm. than the original injury itself. And so the care that is being provided in the park is the care that I've learned and that we've learned over the years and how to address trauma. But it's a different kind of care when that trauma also displaces you from home. Mm-hmm. There's a term that I've learned recently. It's called solastalgia. And it literally means comfort pain. It's the pain of watching your home disappear right in front of your eyes, standing amidst the rubble and watching everything that used to be a source of comfort for you mm-hmm. become a source of pain. When that happens, you have these responses: fight, flight, freeze, fawn, annihilate. And it puts people at risk for really serious behavioral, emotional, and social disruption. Mm-hmm. And so the care is to help people at least get safe and be at home inside their own bodies in community with other safe people. Mm-hmm. So that's sensory input, things that people get to taste or smell or see. It's careful touch like acupuncture or sitting in a zero gravity chair. It's having something refreshing to drink while someone's actively listening to your story. And it's co-locating with resources that you need so that if you have a question, you need cleaning supplies, you need water, you need someone just to help you get connected to some kind of resource, someone is there. Because the most powerful medicine is the medicine of presence. Mm-hmm. Not leaving someone abandoned in a time of profound need.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what the mobile clinic looks like? I'm imagining some of the things that you're describing kind of discreetly, you know, in list form. What does that look like as it is happening?
So our organization has two programs, the Brick and the Tee. That's Power for STL, which is a larger umbrella. And the Tee has done mobile outreach for many years using tents and a modified emergency response vehicle to bring tables, chairs, relaxation, resource to people on the street. And actually, we used to do dense, engaged outreach at MLK and Hodomont in the Wells Goodfellow neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's a very similar kind of outreach from the lessons we learned from that outreach. We bring tents, tables, chairs, mm-hmm. ice, water, and then food trucks have been bringing supplies. Pallets have been delivered by delivery trucks. And at times, we've actually had a physical mobile clinic that can allow for medical care. And it's not just us. The SSM mobile health clinic has come out as well. Mm-hmm. And people's health clinics, people's centers have been bringing out their clinic and their team daily as well. It has been multiple kinds of organizations bringing mutual aid. One of the coolest offerings we have is art and play therapy. And we've mm-hmm. even been joined by some of the folks from the MAID Makers District.
Sure.
And just met today with the team from the Contemporary Art Gallery because they want to bring some care as well. Mm-hmm. Kababi Bayok, who is our beloved artist in residence, we say, came out and did pictures with us one day in the park. So it's really been multiple different kinds of therapy, presence, and sensory input that helps that trauma.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to put a finer point on the note you've made about presence. And why that is so important. I mean, you described that the phenomenon of watching what used to bring you comfort be destroyed and to be in a state of devastation. But being there, why is that such a big deal?
You know, I went to medical school to understand humans. And over two decades of doing trauma care, I've come to see that when the body is broken and the home is lost, the checkbook is negative, and even someone is in a cage because they've been incarcerated, you can bring a sense of hope and healing through what I call the ministry of presence. That was taught to me by the team at Eden Seminary and Shiraz Gorman, who did spiritual care work with us and helped me understand exactly what that is. Mm-hmm. It's holding space for another human being through your absolute, complete, and total presence that signals one thing, which is that they matter. Mm-hmm. And when people have that communication from other human beings, they have a first step. But when you take it a step further and your body is also signaling safety, mm-hmm. that you yourself, through your body language, your tone of voice, and everything you do, that you are deeply concerned about the condition of that other human being, mm-hmm. and you want only for them to feel safe and that they belong. It's the kind of feeling you get from going anywhere where, as the song says, everybody knows your name, mm-hmm. right? That feeling of presence and comfort and belonging is a core element of human well-being. And even when the skies are gray, you can still bring that presence. I've learned that because as a trauma surgeon with people who are literally in the last moments of life, I was able to bring comfort to them and their family through my presence when my knife and my medicine couldn't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. This is what's happening now. And the last thing I want to say is that it is a communal thing. One person with one person can do it if there's a deep relationship. But when a community does it, which is something I've also learned a great deal about from the Black Healers Collective, which is doing some wonderful work outside of Fairground Park, but that group has taught me about the power of doing that collectively, because then a whole oasis of medicine can be created. Mm-hmm.
I'm talking with trauma surgeon Dr. L.J. Punch. He's the founder of the Bullet-Related Injury Clinic. Dr. Punch and his team have been delivering daily aid in Fountain Park, where residents are still recovering from last month's deadly tornado. To return to what you were saying, Dr. Punch, about presence, there's also reliability, people knowing that you are going to be there, the communality. One of the things, too, is that there is a connection between Eden Seminary, mm-hmm. Centennial Church,
yes.
and where you are located. Why is it that you chose to go where you did with this mobile clinic?
Well, we were on that first day after the tornado, May 17th, looking for a good place for outreach, and we had considered Fountain Park and Centennial. We're literally driving around in our vehicle that we call Tweels, the T on wheels, looking for a place to set up. And one of our team members, who's one of our spiritual care providers, Dominique Blake, said, "Hey, Punch, why don't we go to Fountain Park?" after we had not successfully found a good area to set up. So I think that was maybe a word from on high that led mm-hmm. us there. But also, we had a prior knowledge and understanding of Centennial's role in the community as a deliverer of mutual aid, housing and health ministry, and a place that a lot of people who are unsheltered and unhoused had come to depend on, doing weekly meal service and monthly food pantries. Mm-hmm. So I think it made a lot of sense to set up there. One thing I've learned from working with people who are disconnected from communication, don't have phones, don't have internet access, and are basically outside the comfort net of, I suppose, public society, mm-hmm. That when you cannot communicate through media, presence is the communication. And the calendar is how you communicate. Mm-hmm. So I knew with this much instability, the only thing that would get the point across was to be there, mm-hmm. and to be there every day. So people don't have to figure out where you are.
Right,
they don't
right.
figure out what your hours are. If you're going to be there, you're just there. And I knew that if we did that, but this also comes from something I know from taking care of people who are acutely ill, because when someone is critically ill, they have to have intense care every day, every hour. Mm-hmm. It was almost like Fountain Park was in the intensive care unit, and I've been making my rounds every day. Until I see it move from a place that doesn't need that kind of care, I think daily presence is necessary. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this moment has, though, shown us the lack of infrastructure to support housing as a human right for people in general, the lack of safety net for everybody when 5,000 people were suddenly unsheltered overnight. And I think it's been important for me to use everything I've learned about what it is to take care of people who are unsheltered and unhoused, or at least to attempt to support and bring that out to a broader community mm-hmm. at Fountain Park.
So there is the capital of knowledge and wisdom that you have, But capital in the form of money is also a big consideration here. And BRIC is one of dozens of organizations in St. Louis that lost half of their federal funding just before the storm. And to be more specific, BRIC has lost most of the $2 million that you were supposed to have for the next 3 years. What was this federal funding used for?
The grant was a grant funded through the Department of Justice Community Violence Intervention Initiative, which was funded by the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. So it was not simply a grant that an intermittent administration agreed upon. It was a commitment, a bipartisan commitment by Congress to fund community efforts in community safety, recognizing that carceral efforts, incarceration alone, criminal justice-based efforts are not adequate to improve community safety. So that grant was going to fund outreach. And it's actually the reason why we now have a mobile clinic, which thankfully we were able to obtain before the grant was pulled. But now the staff, supplies, and support to keep that clinic going, to do the kinds of things that we're doing right now, to do the kind of things that are the backbone of assuring an EF3 tornado does not create an increase in violence. That funding has been taken away.
Mm-hmm. How have you all been able to do what you're doing, in the face of that kind of loss?
Listen, this work is already funded by love, miracles, courage, and hustle. I mean, that ain't it. We never have been defined by our funding sources and always strive to do, in the Power for STL spirit, what can be done with what we have. Because first we decide why we're doing it. And the why in this moment is that people are worthy and that trauma has occurred and that trauma inside bodies, if it's not quickly and skillfully and deeply attended to, will recur, spread, metastasize, and cause the end of life and deep suffering. That's true, period. And so what does it mean to fill the gap in the hole in that funding? There have been multiple funders who have been responsive, not just to our response around the tornado efforts, but to our efforts in general. I'm seeing more private donations come in, individual people with small amount donations. Our team, led by our new executive director, Dr. Jamila Owens-Todd, has been savvy in making the best decisions possible in how we strategically align our mission. I will say the tornado had different plans in place for us because it's caused us to pivot in ways we never expected. But I will say there has been a robust response. To me, the answer forward, though, is this, which is to show the need, importance, and impact of what it is to care for trauma in people in its myriad forms and in caring for that trauma in a way that's embodied and present and holistic. Show the impact of the way it reduces long-term complications of trauma, whether it be diabetes, cancer, suicide, homicide, overdose, or profound depression. And I think there's an opportunity with this tornado, because now a whole swath of people have these needs. I say that May 16th was like a day where 5,000 people in St. Louis got shot at the same time. This care is relevant, and this is a time to amplify and elevate this approach in general to a broader audience.
Your tone, Dr. Punch, is remarkably bright and optimistic. There are plenty of people who are very worried about the kinds of cuts that have been made. Where does this optimism come from? I mean, is it partly because we're facing a situation that is so unprecedented?
It comes from the root of the work. The core moment of this work starting for me was a moment when I made a decision when no one would fund the effort that I wanted to start, which was community education around bleeding control. I would start with what I had. And I took some of my own funds and I invested it. And it instilled in me a very solid principle. And it's this, which is what you keep is what all you have, but what you give, you multiply. Mm-hmm. And I have seen that math happen over and over and over and over again. I'm giving what I have, and I'm already seeing it multiply by the people showing up to the park, the unbelievable resources. Every single day, somebody is bringing something incredible to offer other people that goes beyond funds. It's about the human capital of presence. It's human technology, and it's way, way, way more than anything money can contain. That keeps me optimistic and focused.
Can you give us a specific example of that?
Yesterday, we had someone bring by two massive flats worth of seedlings, of vegetable plants that were going to be thrown away that community members could take. Today, Diamond Divas brought us two pallets of dry goods, cleaning supplies, and water, a second pallet of water. The day before, we had acupuncturist from a local acupuncturist collective, including Dr. F. Orr Bromley, come and do care, and Kate Stotlard do care free of charge. We've had chair massage therapist Hattie come and give care free of charge. We've had people bring food that came from an overabundance of prepared catered meals. People have brought multiple special things. I asked one individual for snacks because kiddos' snacks don't necessarily come with food boxes, you know, fun things that maybe aren't totally perfect in nutrition, but they're really important when you're trying to corral kiddos. And they brought us tons of goldfish and Cheez-Its and fruit snacks and Gatorade packets. So it's stuff like that every single day where people are like, I know you're there. I know if I go there, I will find somebody who's there to help. And so we're giving helpers a way to help. And that multiplying effect of generosity is something I've seen my entire life. And so I'm not surprised that it's happening now. It does require a fair amount of courage because there are moments when the crickets are cricketing and you're not quite sure how you're going to make it work. But I believe that people are worthy, and I believe presence is powerful, and I just keep digging into that day by day. I also am part of an organization that has been wildly generous with my time, letting me go out there, even though I have other roles and responsibilities, and they've done a lot to make sure the clinic inside the building, the brick, still operates, as well as the executive administrative operations. That's truly tremendous, and it's the only reason why this has been possible.
Dr. Punch, we've talked with a number of people on this show who've been helping others meet basic needs after the tornado, and a recurring message has been a concern for what happens after this phase. We just hit that 1 month mark, especially when it comes to mental health.
Well, I think the most important stage of this whole disaster is going to be the stage where we start to remember it. And I believe that that's when a lot of the trauma will set in on some people, a lot of the PTSD, a lot of the separation anxiety, because they will begin to relive their experiences. And I believe that it is that aspect that through this tornado, especially being here in the Midwest or here in St. Louis, we've seen things that we've never seen before. You know, a lot of these people can only imagine seeing a roof in the middle of the street or a car sitting up on somebody's porch or something like that. It's going to be very important as we try to get through this, that phase of giving as much attention as we can to the mental effect, the emotional disconnect that we're going to have with a lot of the stuff that happened through this tornado.
And that was Kevin Jackson. He spent weeks handing out free hot dogs to residents in the Fairgrounds Park neighborhood, which was devastated by the tornado. He spent nights sleeping in his truck. This is a regular, everyday person acknowledging the mental health needs that are going to continue. What does his awareness of that indicate to you about why this work needs to continue?
Well, first, I just can't say enough about the grassroots on the ground, largely Black-led response in North St. Louis that created those mutual aid networks, such as the People's Action, Action STL, the People's Response with Action STL, For the Ville, For the Culture, Invest STL, Dream Builders for Equity, FCC. They were outside. And a lot of individuals as well, for instance, Cammy with my friends and I, brought her whole crew. She does film.
Right, and she's
like out there serving meals. Like that response, though, that immediate need response is both genuinely loving and caring and a little bit fueled by our Superman cortisol response to stress, right? What happens when that goes away And then what happens when we come back to that moment and we face the poverty of resource that we did or didn't have in the moment? I'm calling this the core three phases of climate trauma response. And it's very similar to what I've seen in other kinds of traumatic responses. The first 6 to 8 weeks, phase one, is when our body is acutely healing. It's inflamed. It's putting down scar tissue the best it can. Sometimes that's when we get infections and pain, but it's all stress response, cortisol heavy and vigorous. Then there's the subacute phase. That's the 6 to 8 weeks to a year, where we're doing the really boring job of recovery. It's when we get to about a C-minus version of ourselves, and getting back to an A is a long road. That's when you're in physical therapy and it hurts to walk. Mm-hmm. That's when you're looking at that hospital bill and you don't know how you're going to pay it. That's when all the things you did to help your loved one got you in trouble with your job and you've got to find a way out, right? That's the deep work of recovery. But it's still, in essence, you fighting back. Mm-hmm. Reconstruction and true recovery doesn't start until the 1 year after mark. I saw this in particular when we responded to the CVPA school shooting that happened in October 2022. That moment and our response to it really defined a lot of the work we do now. But it wasn't until the first recognition of the year after where we really started to engage the students in the community and what recovery meant. I don't exactly know why. Mm-hmm. Our minds work this way, but I do know that the way we respond right now, or at least, I don't know if I know it, but I certainly believe it, mm-hmm. the way we respond right now to the acute trauma really impacts that long-term recovery. We talk about PTSD as if it's this inevitability that we can only study after the fact, but it's my belief that what you do the next day and the way you signal safety, comfort, and presence to people in the short term, that has a profound impact on long-term recovery. I don't have a ton of data about this. I don't have a perfect placebo randomized controlled study to show that this happened, but I have witnessed it at the brick, and it's why I'm doing right now with what I'm currently calling the 314 Oasis, mm-hmm. which is three phases, one purpose, which is presence, and four pillars, mm-hmm. rest, power, care, and connection. And that is what's happening at Fountain Park. And it's more than even just what Power for STL and the T and the Brick are doing. It's what this collaborative collective of even Fountain Park residents are doing to make sure we set ourselves on a bolder, richer, healed trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Dr. LJ Punch is the founder of the Bullet-Related Injury Clinic, or BRIC, and the TSTL, a holistic harm reduction program. You can find their mobile clinic open from 11 to 4 p.m. Dr. Punch, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.